Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Tim Dennis. Another weekend blowing by, Tim.
Yep.
They go too quickly. Seems like we're just wrapping up one weekend and we're already beginning another one, which is always good for us. We love the weekends, but it just seems to be moving a little too quickly. We've got an interesting guest we're going to be joined by in just a few moments. You know, we've had a chance, Tim, to see amazing places around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well-known haunted locations. We hear from listeners around the world that have what they believe to be spirits in their home or in their business or around them. And many of them are at a loss. What do I do? How do I help them? Should I, if it's grandma and she elected to stay here to be with us, should I be asking her to just go to the light? Is that a bad thing? And, you know, you and I, we don't really have the answers. We've done our best through 13 years of doing the show. And we've talked to people that have, you know, claimed to have the abilities to cross people over or help aid on the other side. But it's few and far between that I get a sense really know what they're doing. And I don't mean that as a disrespect, but as you and I know, we've been to locations where somebody has gone in to quote unquote cleanse it. And 2 days later, we're getting a call back because some activity is kicking back up in the house.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that aspect of this fascinates me. A little bit later on in the show, during Theater of the Mind, it's a brand new Theater of the Mind, and it's another one of my personal encounters. And it was hard to record. I got to be honest with you, Tim. I get choked up every time I tell the story, and delivering the last few lines of it always gags me, and not in a bad way. Just my throat clenches, and I get close to having that out loud sob. So it took about 8 takes before I was able to deliver that line without sounding like a blubbering mess. But it was probably one of the more impactful moments in our journey of trying to understand life and the afterlife. Well, today, Tim, we're going to examine what it's like to help souls cross over. Why do souls end up lost? Why do they stay here? And do we, as individuals, have any ability to help, or do we need to lean on the experts? Joining us for the remainder of today's show, he has over 20 years of helping spirits cross over, people who have died suddenly to adjust to the afterlife. You know, whether it's victims of fires, automobile accidents, shootings, stabbings, drownings, they come to him and he helps them. They're interrupted death experiences, he calls them. Well, Father Nathan Castle is with us for the show today to discuss this ability and when it began for him and what it's like. Father Castle, thank you so much for being here.
Great to talk with you, Dave.
This really kind of, I think, speaks to a lot of people. And we're in October. We're in the Halloween month when people are most interested in ghosts and spooks and specters. And the main question is, why are they here? What happens in the death process that might leave a soul on earth? And I know we're going to explore that, but I'd like a little bit of your background. Did you always have visitations or abilities to sense the dead, or was that as you progressed in your life and followed your path into religion?
Well, I was born into a active practicing Catholic family, and I outlined in my book that very early on, my mom was my main teacher about spiritual things. And I was taught that I had a family here on earth and I had a family in heaven, and that what we did before we went to sleep is talk to the family in heaven. And that the distinction between being alive on the earth and being alive after one dies is not that big of a deal. And I could bless people. They could hear me when I spoke to them and so on. And then when I was, I don't know, even in kindergarten, maybe first grade, we were learning about heaven, hell, and purgatory, and that there was this in-between space, purgatory, where people were mostly okay, but they needed help, and that we could help them with our prayers. And both of my aunts were nuns were Dominican nuns who were first grade teachers. And so I had not only my mom and dad, but I had two first grade teacher nuns that were part of shaping my ideas about God and life and death and afterlife. So one of them taught me right before I made my first communion at age 7 that she took me aside and she said, "Now, I want you to understand that God loves everybody, but God especially loves children, and that the prayers of children go straight to God's heart, and that while you're a child, and it won't be long, your childhood is short, but while you're a child, you have superpowers, and you need to pray for everybody and everything you can think about while you have the superpowers of a child." And so I was really busy. I'd go to sleep praying for all the souls in purgatory, but I had a very specific method about how I did it.
Was that kind of a heavy burden to have put on your shoulders at such a young age to feel that, you know, this was something that was for a child to do? Or did you feel that that was a gift, that if you had this ability to help others, it's something that you relished as opposed to feeling like it became a chore?
Well, I didn't think of it as a unique gift. I wasn't being taught this because I had supernatural powers. I was endowed with what God gave everybody else, the ability to pray. And that's what I did. So I didn't feel like a burden. I just, I would pray for all the souls that had died. We got a morning and an evening newspaper in those days. And I knew there was a whole page or two of pictures of people that had died. So I'd pray for them. I grew up in Southeast Texas where Catholics are kind of a minority. And I knew that the Protestants didn't believe in a purgatory. And so I pray for the Protestants because I figured their families didn't know to pray for them when they died. Anyway, I had a whole methodology that I would be falling asleep praying for what I called the poor souls in line at the bank.
When, okay. That
I
does feel like it. Purgatory. You're right.
Well, anywhere that you have to wait, where you'd rather
right.
just be done with it.
Exactly.
My parents started college funds for each of us the week we were born, and I had this little tiny book that was the passbook savings thing, and my dad would take me to the bank with him, and I knew the number would get bigger because he put more money in or they compounded the interest. But when you went to the bank, they planned on making you wait. You know, they'd have these velvet rope things that went zigzaggedy all through the lobby, and you had to get in line, you know, like you're in an amusement park. It's not fun. And then you're just waiting your turn. And somehow that became my idea of what it must be like to be in purgatory, that you're somewhere in the line. And if you're just patient, you'll get to the front. But if somebody helped you, you'd get there even faster. And so I decided that purgatory was going to have prompt customer service because I was going to be all over it.
That's fantastic. All right. So this was kind of your job when you were doing this growing up and realizing that, you know, that somebody needs to pray for the people. And yeah. You took it upon that yourself. That's remarkable in my estimation. There, so many kids are so self-absorbed and not worried about the living, let alone the dead. I just think that's that really does show that there's a calling for some of us that to heed the call and to accept it. And obviously that deeply impacted you. Now, would you ever sense or see spirits?
No, I don't think so. The first time that I can remember one of them responding to me was Jack Kennedy. I was in the second grade when he was assassinated, and his children were younger than me. I'm 62, and Caroline and John were like a year and two beyond me. And oh my God, you know, he's the first and only Catholic president, and his picture was on the wall next to the Pope and Jesus in our classrooms. And the day that he was shot, it was like they shot God. And we were told to pray for the president. And of course, and they canceled school. And by the time I got home, he was dead. And, I started praying for him. And I decided that instead of praying my regular, you know, poor souls in line at the bank prayers, I would pray just for him. And the night before we were going back to school, I don't remember if his funeral, I think it was on a Monday. So it might've been Monday night or Tuesday night, but that really weird period of time. I prayed for him and I could see him and I could feel his emotions. And we looked at each other and I knew he wanted privacy. And so I didn't linger, but I just nodded at him and prayed that he would be happy, be well soon. And anyway, it was very vivid, and I didn't tell anyone about it because I thought I would be laughed at. But I'm 62 now, and I was 7 then, but I remember it.
And did you carry that with you for a long time, or was that just something that was a fleeting memory of childhood until you got older and really started to engage and embrace this calling?
I think it's probably the latter. I went about my life, I suppose. I always stayed interested in him and in his family. And I've had a prayer relationship with him ever since. And I think of him as a friend. And I've gotten to have some interaction with him over the years, but mostly I just went about my life and, school, high school, into college. And then I had an experience at the end of my high school career. I had an experience of what, as a Catholic Christian, I would call the Holy Spirit and an infilling of the Spirit, kind of Pentecostal experience on a retreat where I understood God to be inside me, not just outside of me. It's easy to think of a higher power, however one conceives of that, as a thing apart from oneself in another place, often in another dimension. And I experienced at 18 that might be true, but we also overlap, and that we're in each other, very much like a child's in the womb. It doesn't know it's in the womb.
If you don't mind me bouncing back real quickly, because I know listeners will be all over me for not asking more. When you say that you've been in contact with Kennedy through prayer and this, is he working in an advisory or guidance kind of level, or how does that exactly work?
Well, I try to speak just of what I've experienced. Mm-hmm. You know how a lot of people who are well-known, who have celebrity for one reason or another, are admired for the good they do. And so even though we've never met these people, we have something of a heart connection to them.
Right.
You know, he's one, for example, and Martin Luther King draws that from a lot of people, even Abraham Lincoln, or I don't know, just different film stars and people in the entertainment field. We can sometimes have a bond with these people, even though we've never met them. And I after that experience, when the week that he died, I just stayed in that sphere with him, and I continued to pray for him. And eventually I found that some people, when they cross, he's been helpful. We can get into that part of it.
Right. Now, a lot of people will bring up the fact that, you know, in some of these cases, spirits are maybe trying to deceive us and that it's not who we think it is. It might be something more nefarious. How do you discern between something that may lead you down the path believing that it's helpful and turning darker, or, you know, just realizing, no, this is truly a good spirit, an enlightened spirit that's here to guide?
Well, as you know, I'm a Catholic priest, and so all the language that I use to try to make sense of my life comes from that vocabulary and from that community. I never do anything in the spiritual realm without first making the sign of the cross. That might be familiar to plenty of people who aren't Catholic or Christian. Crossing, you know, making a cross over from one's forehead to heart and over the shoulders. Tracing the cross of Christ over oneself. And then I pray to St. Michael, the archangel. Michael shows up across world religions. He's big in Islam, in Judaism. Michael, the archangel, shows up a lot, not just in Catholic Christian areas. He's a protective spirit. And then I pray for, I fill the room with holy ones, with Mary, Mother of God, and lots of other. I'm a Dominican, so St. Dominic is important to us. And I have a whole, you know, a whole bunch of spirit friends that I don't do any of this stuff without first asking to be protected and surrounded by love and peace before I would do any of this work.
All right. That's great. That's great insight. I just want people to kind of hear that and know that this isn't something to just muck about with freely. And
it would be the opposite of sitting in front of a Ouija board and hoping that some passing spirit is going to rattle the teacups.
Mm-hmm.
I just warn people that I, even though I'm a positive human being, I don't trust every human person on the earth, and I don't pick up hitchhikers.
Right.
I just don't think it's safe. And the same is true for angelic and human spirits. Even though they're all made in the image of God and have inherent goodness, that doesn't mean they're well-behaved or have my best interest at heart. And so I don't open myself to just anybody. And I wouldn't recommend that to anybody else.
Great advice.
For the very reason you said, because they can be lying.
All right. Now, talk to me. You were saying you do rely on quite a bit of protection and others to aid you and help you in this process.
Right.
And do people seek you out? Father, do they come to you and say, you know, I think my house is haunted. I think my grandmother is having trouble crossing over, or there's something going on here?
Once in a while, although I don't really invite that. I try to be at the service of the Holy Spirit as I understand my calling. And the particular niche that I've been given to do involves not so much that. It involves people who come to me while I'm asleep in a dream and show me what resembles a little video of their violent death. So I'm asleep, and it's normally between 2 and 4 in the morning, and into my dreamscape comes somebody else's material. And it's unfamiliar, and it's usually violent. It's buffered so that I don't wake up screaming, but I'm not terrorized. But the images that I'm given to see are
graphic,
awful.
Yeah.
And every narrator of a story has to decide how they're going to tell their story. And so, for example, I've dealt with a lot of people that died in car crashes. Sometimes they have you on the sidewalk and you're viewing the events they want you to see from the sidewalk. Sometimes it's like you're in a blimp, seeing it from above. Other times you're in the back seat. The worst are when they put you right behind the wheel and you're seeing the 18-wheeler cross the center line and hit you. So it just depends on how people want to tell a story, but they give me the details of what they went through so that I can understand why they were traumatized and got stuck. And then I end up working with a prayer partner to help them move along.
Now, is this something that you'll corroborate? You'll wake up in the morning to look up car crash victim, train, suicide, murder, and see if you can put a face to these people?
Early on, I tried a little bit of that, but this started 20 years ago. And so if you think of what the internet was 20 years ago and what your facility was in using it, can you think back to when you had dial-up?
Exactly.
And,
right.
talk
about purgatory. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And when I was first learning how to do anything online, I did try to do a little bit of that, and I just found it hugely frustrating and a big time suck. And then you'd get on these sites and they want you to stop and make a password and a username and pay a fee and all like that. I had to just decide, I don't believe this is what God has called me to do, to be this sort of sleuth that comes behind these experiences and tries to prove their veracity. I just try to, and besides, they come about once a week. And so I've always got a next one. And so I just decided early on, no, if that needs to be done, it needs to be done by somebody else because I've got other work to do.
Oh, so you will deflect some of those situations?
Well, I don't know what you mean, Dave.
Well, you said you don't have time. You'll say, no, I'm too busy. And what exactly do you mean by that?
Oh, no. I understand my vocation is to help the person who came to me in a dream cross over. But the secondary part of your question was, do I then go back and try to investigate
Oh, gotcha. All right. So it's just the investigation part. You don't take the time to do that because you know the next one's coming already.
And I just figured if this book ever saw the light of day, my book, Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Crossover, has only been released less than a week. It's just gone live on Amazon. So I figured if I succeeded at getting to a broad audience, which is what I'm trying to do, that this would probably happen, that somebody else might emerge to do this kind of sleuthing thing, and I'd be okay with that. It's just not my job.
All right, great. When these dream visitations began for you, again, were you able to discern pretty immediately that this wasn't just a scary dream, but that it was a true call for help?
Yeah, I was. And the preface of the book is called The Story of Ray. Briefly, by that time I was in my early to mid 40s, and I was with a group of people in the mountains of northern Arizona on a retreat, and I was asleep in the middle of the night, and I was dreaming about finishing a round of golf. I'm a golfer, and I was playing with another priest friend, and we got off the golf course, and we were having a drink in the bar in the 19th hole, and there was a silent auction going on for a charity. So, Dave, this is a slice of my life. Priests are in my dreams, and churches, church services, and charity events, and golf. This is all my stuff. But at this event, I looked across the way, and there was this horrible piece of art on the wall in a frame, like a painting. And it was just so ghastly. I said to my friend, who in the world would give that to a charity? They should be ashamed. But it was so appalling, I needed to go closer to it to look at it the way that we do when there's a car crash and everybody slows down to, you know, rubberneck at it. I went toward the thing to observe it more carefully, and it moved out of the picture plane, and it started rolling like film. And I knew that I'd crossed a boundary, or that something had just shifted, that it wasn't my material anymore. And I even knew it while I was still asleep. I was now observer of material, and it wasn't my psychobabble. It was somebody else's material.
Now, do they come to you, Father, and they say, help me? Or is it just, here's my story, and then you're kind of tasked with taking the next step further?
Well, the first scene that I saw was a man on fire on the hood of a car, and it wasn't a car crash. He somehow caught fire because he was wearing greasy clothes, and I never quite understood how Ray caught fire to begin with, but he did, and he burned to death. And so I understood that he didn't say help me in so many words that he didn't need to. the images were, anybody in that circumstance would want to be helped. Wow. So I knew right away I was supposed to help.
You're a strong individual. Being littered with those kind of images and being able to keep pushing forward and not, do you ever find yourself asking for a respite? Are you ever like, hey, you know what, God, can you let Father John down the road handle this for a week or two? I need a break.
No, once in a great while, but the Holy Spirit loves me, and the Spirit is completely wise and knows all things. And the Spirit knows when I'm overworked. And I'll sometimes go for several weeks in a stretch without what I call a night visitor. And then when I do get a night visitor, as soon as they show me their material, I wake from it, I turn on the light and write it down in a journal that I keep on the nightstand. And it might be a matter of a week or several weeks before I can get with a prayer partner to go into it and figure out what's going on and how we can help the person. So, I have a backlog right now. I probably have about five or six who have come that I haven't yet had a chance to pray with yet.
All right, we're back and having a fascinating conversation with Father Nathan Castle. His book, and we'll have a link up to that on today's program, Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. I've mentioned it. I mentioned it ad nauseum, Father, because I've been terrified of death since I was a child. This was a gift or a curse. Ever since I was 5 or 6 years old, I've had bone terrifying nights of fear of going to sleep because I may not wake up the next morning. It's kept me forever in this pursuit of trying to understand what comes next. And I've had remarkable experiences. Like you, I've had dream visitations. My grandfather came to me in a dream after his death, knowing I was not dealing with it well. He came to me. I was aware in the dream. This wasn't just a dream. It was vivid. It is as real a memory to me as this moment you and I are sharing right now, Father. And my grandfather came to me and he answered questions about death and heaven and what comes next. And I felt good for a while. But then that fear kept creeping in. And I've had three near-death experiences in my life where I was gone, but I didn't see the light. I didn't see hell, flame, and brimstone either, so I'm thankful for that. But I didn't hear God's voice. I didn't see angels or my loved ones waiting for me. And that just added to my fear of death. And I'm trying to get past that and trying to understand how this all works. So, you know, obviously my grandfather was there for a reason and came to me. Do deceased relatives help us adjust to moving through our own deaths as well? I mean, is that when it is my time, will there be people that I love and recognize there to guide me?
Yeah, sometimes they are relatives, and other times, at least in the experiences that I've had, they can be the most unlikely little people that were kind of bit players in the movie of your life. Some kid that you were friendly with on the playground in the second grade. It doesn't have to be your aunt or your nana or it could be some little person that just was part of your life for a little while. But whatever part they played was all safe and good, sweet, kind, loving. Sometimes little people like that show up as part of the welcoming party.
And this moment, like the one that I shared with my grandfather, the big question I always had, you know, at the end of this moment, after he explained to me what death was like and where he was, we're a very huggy, affectionate family, and we reached out to hug one another. When I grabbed him, it felt like a shaft of vibrating air and energy. It didn't feel human. And I backed away and he said, "I'm sorry, you're not used to that." And he said, "Okay, now." And I hugged him and I could feel skin and bone and shirt. I could feel my grandfather there. And I often wondered, do you think I really encountered my grandfather? Or do you think that I may have encountered an angelic who came in the form of something I'd love and recognize and respond to well? Something that might take on this visage to make the message easier to digest?
Well, I've never met you, and I've only just heard the story, but the way that you tell it sounds like your discernment of it is that it was your grandfather. Isn't that right?
It was at the time. Since then, I've often wondered about it being something more because, again, I don't know what death is like. And I don't know, is my grandfather in heaven playing, Baccarat with Elvis, or is he still coming back? I don't really know what the rules of engagement are and how they can vacillate between that realm and here. So I started questioning more and more if this was more of an angelic intervention and an encounter of something that came in a more recognizable, loving, understanding form. Because if I saw it, honestly, if I had a dream like this and this angel appeared to me and glowing and white robes and I might just think I was having a dream.
Yeah.
But because it was my grandfather, it seemed so much more profound.
You use the phrase other realms. When you do that, do you presume distance?
I guess I do because I don't know much, there's heaven, there's hell, there is earth. And I grew up Lutheran. I grew up with that understanding. And, it's just when death comes, you move on to where you need to be. And that's kind of the end of the process in the understanding and belief I grew up in. So, yeah, to me, there was a distance. There was and I don't know, again, there seems to be so many conflicting views of the afterlife and ghosts and spirits and what they can and can't do. And everything that we're seeing is truly evil, just trying to draw us in, or no, it really is the loved ones and spirits. I think a lot of people are conflicted on how to deal with that.
Well, the reason I asked about the spatial metaphors and the presumption of distance is like you and I right now, you're in Minnesota and I'm in Arizona while we're talking. And then we're taping this so that it can be broadcast all over the place, right?
Yes, it goes around the world.
Yeah. But right now we're doing this over a cell phone, and that is just a vibration that people have figured out how to get the sound of me pushing air through vocal cords all the way to Minnesota and then broadcast it all over the world. That the reason I'm going on about this is it's not necessary to presume distance when talking about an encounter with somebody like your grandfather. You don't have to think that he's in a distant place and has come to you. He might be right under your nose. The same way that the room that you're in is full of radio waves. There's all kind of activity that you can't see right in the space you're in right now.
Okay. Now you've had this ability. You've encountered these things. Does the angelic realm also help you in these cases? Are sometimes they the ones that bring you this person in need?
They are. In fact, the very first time the gentleman I mentioned earlier, Ray, the guy who died on fire, all the people that you have to understand that, or let me make it clear, the people that I deal with have all died traumatic deaths. So these are not people that, you know, fell asleep and didn't wake up or, you know, died of a long, slow illness. All of my people died violent, traumatic, sudden deaths. Oh, I have 1 minute dead the next. So that's a subset of the population that's rare. And they've been traumatized and they didn't pass well. Plenty of people that died traumatic deaths do pass well, but a small subset of them don't. And that's the little subset I work with. But when they do come through, I ask them right away, how did you find me? And the answer I kept getting was, I don't know, somebody brought me here. And what I learned is the someone was their guardian. The guardian angel was the language that I would use as a Catholic. And the guardians are real sweet. They're like a secret service person that hasn't left you even after you died. They stay with you, even though you might demand almost complete privacy. They still won't leave their post. They'll go to the edge of whatever space you create and not bother you, but they're not going to leave you alone. And then when it does come time that a person's ready to try to move along, they come with and they help.
All right, so then that kind of begs the question, if the angelic realm is bringing some of these people to you, why is it that they're there? I mean, God is all-powerful, God is all-knowing and all-seeing. The angels work for him. Why aren't they just doing this? Why are they leaning on the flesh and blood of you to get them through this, Father Castle?
Well, again, I'm coming from a Catholic Christian construct, but I believe that God's activity is all around us and not just in another realm, and that God lives in us and we're made of God. We're made in God's own image, and that God's activity on the earth is through human instruments, and I'm one such. So I don't think it has to be one or the other. I'm a kind of a blend, and so are you, I believe, of human and divine. And when we make ourselves available, it shouldn't surprise us that that we get tapped on to do things, a lot of normal, usual things and some paranormal or unusual things.
Okay, we've got to take a quick break. But before we do that, we're going to open up the Darkhives. And this is a very personal story from my own life from about 8 years ago. And I hope you enjoy this, ladies and gentlemen, today's Theater of the Mind.
Today, we go back to the Darkhives of Darkness Dave's past in his own encounter, Crossing Over. For many years, I've traveled the world visiting famous and some not-so-famous haunted locations, always in hopes of having an experience for myself. One such adventure was of the ghostly kind. I organized an event to Bobby Mackey's Music World, considered by some to be one of the most active and crazy locations in the U.S. Ghosts, phantoms, tortured souls, and the home to the doorway to hell. Or so they say. I mean, it is a country bar. How far can hell be? Bobby Mackey's had been featured on the Travel Channel hit TV series Ghost Adventures, and it affected the team in a profound way. So when they asked me to run an event for them and their fans, I jumped at the chance. The night was very weird. Strange phenomena taking place on all levels of the establishment and from all four corners of the building. Earlier in the day, a priest had been called in and asked to do a blessing around the building to help cross any spirits over. While visiting the basement and standing near the doorway to hell, the priest began yelling and cursing and demanding the dark energies to leave. He was so enraged, he tore his religious collar off, threw it to the floor, splashing holy water around in what many described as a very odd incident. As the guests began breaking off on their quests to find proof of paranormal activity that night, a strange phenomenon began to happen. Equipment around the location began saying things like,
"Priest, fake, fraud,"
and repeating it throughout the building.
"Priest, fake, fraud. Priest, fake, fraud."
Almost simultaneously and throughout the entire building, on every style device that allowed oral communication, spirit boxes, SB7 devices, Ovilus, and more. I made my way to the basement with EVP specialists Mark and Debbie Constantino. Never one to be shy about testing the parameters of a location, I hopped the rail and stood in the mouth of the Hell's Gate, the well that they claimed has been a spot of unearthly phenomena. Debbie Constantino and Ghost Adventures member Nick Groff joined me. We had a captive audience of investigators in front of us, watching from the safety up and behind the barrier that we had crossed to stand in this well. Debbie joined me standing in the well, and Nick knelt down by us to listen as we tried to communicate with the spirits of Bobby Mackey's. I switched on my spirit box and it began scanning, the quiet clicking and hissing filling the air. I introduced myself and Debbie Constantino and Nick, then began asking if anyone wanted to talk with us. There was nothing, just the crackling and popping of the box as it scanned non-existent radio waves, looking for a connection. No questions or comments seemed to elicit a response. That is, until I asked about the priest and his visit earlier. "I heard the Archbishop came to visit earlier today and got quite upset. Did it upset you that he was here?" The radio crackled, and then a dark voice came forth, spitting a vile comment. I looked at Debbie, and her eyes grew wide, and Nick said, "Dude, did you just hear what I heard?" I nodded and said, "Yeah, I think so." I snapped off the recorder and the spirit box and rewound the recording. I pushed play, and I could hear my voice through the crackle and the pop. Then, very loudly and clearly, we heard the voice on the recorder bark back out,
"Fuck priest.
The vile voice called the priest a homophobic term after cursing him, and then revealed him as a fake priest. We were all astounded. At that point, we heard a scream come from a few rooms away. We all decided to end our line of questioning, as whatever was there was very unhappy, and someone else seemed to need our assistance. We checked around and found a couple of women that claimed a scary white face had rushed them from the depths of darkness in the basement, only to vanish into thin air. As the night wound on, more strange events were reported: slamming doors, strange voices, and more. It was documented on the Return to Bobby Mackey's episode of Ghost Adventures that would air a few years later. Finally, at the end of the night, most of the investigators and fans had made their way back to the hotel. Just a few of our friends had stayed on. Nick and I made our way through the building, making sure everyone had gotten out safely. We made our way to the basement, where just a handful of our friends remained, very near the portal of hell. They were trying to make communication, but to no avail. The spirit box just hissed and crackled as they called out to the spirits. Nick and I decided to head back upstairs, and as we approached the door, I heard what I thought was my last name being called from the device the team was using. I paused, turned around, and I yelled out, "Did that thing just say my name?" The group exchanged a nervous laugh and agreed that that is what they heard. With that, I turned and walked back to the group. "Okay, I'm here. What do you want?" I called out to the dark room. The spirit box responded, but this time in a kind voice.
"Pray."
I asked aloud, "Did you say pray?"
"Pray,"
is all it responded. I looked around the group with a look of bewilderment. Did this thing just call me back in the room to pray for the spirits of Bobby Mackey's? A radio show host to help clear a room and cross over the spirits? Okay, I said. Let's pray. We all began to hold hands and bow our heads, creating a circle, the room dimly lit by the lights of the tools around us. Now, it's important to reiterate, there were no other words said. It called my name twice, asked me to pray twice, and was silent. Just the popping and hissing. I called out, Lord, I ask that you send the Holy Spirit to visit each room of this building and guide each and every lost soul home, and to christen each room in the blood of Jesus Christ, to sanctify it, bless it, and keep it safe from evil. Let no lost soul be forgotten. I call forth their friends and relatives and ask them to escort their loved ones into the light. I pray this in your name. Amen. That was a prayer I had never said before. A prayer I felt guided to say then. And I've used that every day since to keep my friends and family protected when they feel they're in the presence of spirits or dark forces. With that, we all stood in silence, listening, waiting for what I cannot say. A sign, maybe? A glimmer of hope that we had somehow helped? Just the sound of the spirit box clipping away. I looked up as I released hands with the people standing next to me and I said, I don't know why you called for me, but I hope it helped. As I began to turn away, one final word sprang forth from the box. A word of hope. A word of peace. The message we all needed that night after hours of strange phenomena. I hoped I had helped, and the voice, that final voice, the only voice that was heard there again that night, came from the popping and hissing of the radio.
Joy.
My eyes welled with tears and I stifled a soft sob as I made my way out of the room to process what had just happened. My friend Nick at my side knew this moment was deep. He placed an arm around my shoulder and said, "You did good, Dave." And then we exited Bobby Mackey's.
All right, let me break.
Sick cocks.
Adam.
Wait. Hold on, what?
If there's anyone here, you can speak to me now through this device.
Not 10 minutes.
How many people are here with me right now? Where exactly are you?
We're back. Welcome to the show. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Our guest today, Tim, and I find this stuff fascinating, is Father Nathan Castle. He is a Catholic priest who helps souls cross over. He has a brand new book called Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. We have a link to that book in today's podcast information, so you can find it and access it very easily. Father Castle, thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom with us regarding this. I think it's important for a lot of people to know and understand.
Well, it's a fun conversation. I'm enjoying a lot.
Now, in the Theater of the Mind that we just played and I discussed this, it's interesting in the fact that, I was called upon by this kind of discarnate voice to pray for the spirits on hand. And I did so. Again, it felt weird to me. I'm a radio show host. Why would the spirits call me forward to pray for them? And then to get that message at the end when everything died down and went quiet. And then the only word that came out when I said, I hope everything's okay, is the word joy. You know, it, it is, it, really impacted me. It still chokes me up to this day, and it's been over 8 years since this happened. But, you know, why would we be tasked, the individual, to do these prayers and to try to help people cross over?
Well, we might be, you're asking, it sounds like, why would God, however you understand God, be asking us to be involved? Is that it?
Or in this case, the spirits, why would they think, you know what, I need your help? Why would they reach out to me, of all people, to do something like this, to do that? I mean, you know, you have had a calling. Your family has had a calling.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was a construction worker. My mom was a nurse. You know, I grew up through Lutheran grade school. I was never, you know, deeply religious, although I'm very spiritual with God and Christ and have a very strong faith in all of that. It's never been something that, you know, it has been an overwhelming feature in my life. But yet here I was in this strange setting being called forward to do something like this, something I'd never been asked to do before.
Well, if you remember the Jesus story, he wasn't at the synagogue all the time either. In fact, they threw him out of it. I don't think of him as a particularly religious person.
Yeah, but he kind of gets grandfathered in. When your dad is God, you kind of have that stigma already attached to you, don't you think?
but your dad is God.
All right. I got you on this. So I shouldn't be as freaked out by that situation, and people that want to help and are doing that and putting forth prayers for the departed, that does impact. We do have an impact in helping these spirits then.
I think we cooperate a lot on a lot of different things. I think that's the way the universe is built. We're not each an island unto ourselves. We help each other out in lots of different ways. And one way that we do that is, in this conversation, is helping people cross if that's what they need help with.
All right. Now you've got an interesting story, and would you talk to us about assisting Patrick Swayze's sister?
That one's one of my most fun. I will. This one is a little uncommon. I mean, there's a genre of this, but anyway, I have, I told you I'm one of five kids, and both of my sisters have some of the gifts that I do or similar ones. And my younger sister, Catherine, was up in Oregon, and I was working at Stanford University. I was the pastor of the Catholic community. Catherine calls me on the phone and says, I was at prayer, and St. Rose of Lima won't leave me alone. I said, well, what am I supposed to do about it? And she said, well, she keeps telling me that you're to help your brother, Johnny Castle. My last name is Castle. She said, St. Rose, I don't have a brother named Johnny. But the message was insistent. So she came out of prayer and went to the internet and typed in Johnny Castle. So you know what comes up for Johnny Castle?
I don't.
Well, I'll tell you. Patrick Swayze. That was the name of his character in Dirty Dancing.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. In here, I've had to watch it a bajillion times because I've got daughters. You'd think by now I would remember Johnny Castle.
Well, apparently it was a low-budget film, and he was fairly unknown at the time, although he did have the lead, but it launched his career.
Right.
And so anyway, as soon as she said, it's Patrick Swayze, I said, oh, God. I knew that he was in Stanford Hospital. I knew he was dying of pancreatic cancer, and I had the credentials to go to Stanford Hospital. I did visitation there regularly as part of my job.
Wow.
So I thought, well, am I supposed to go find Patrick Swayze? So I said a prayer, and I went to the head of chaplains, who was a sweet elderly Catholic priest. And I said, here's the deal. I just laid it all out. And I said, you might think I'm as crazy as the day is long, but here's my story. And I'm wondering if you can help me get in to see Patrick Swayze. And he said, Nathan, you couldn't have asked at a worse time. Somebody just went into UCLA Medical Center last week and went into a celebrity's room and filmed their medical chart or whatever and put it on one of the scandal shows, one of the, you know, pop star shows. And he said, there's a big crackdown right now, we're all on high alert to make sure that celebrities don't have unwanted visitors. And so I can't give you information on Patrick Swayze. He'd have to ask for you. You can't ask for him. So I'm supposed to help Johnny Castle, so I can't get in his room. So I sat in the lobby and just said prayers and said, any minute now, somebody's going to come up and say, thank God you're here, and take me to Patrick Swayze's room. So I waited half an hour until it didn't work. So I just said, okay, God, I tried and did the best I could. So later in the week, I got with a prayer partner and said, we need to pray about this Johnny Castle thing because I'm supposed to help and I don't know how. And we went into prayer, and my prayer partner said, well, there's somebody here, and she wants to talk. Would it be okay if I let her? So my prayer partner had the facility that I don't like to call mediumship, because in the Catholic world, it's kind of all spooky.
Right.
But I call it the prophetic gift. It belongs to the gift of prophecy, allowing speech just for a specific purpose. I said, go ahead. We had done our protective prayer that I described earlier, so I wasn't letting some demon into the room to whatever. She spoke, and it turned out it was his sister. I think her name is, I've forgotten it. I think it's Terry. I ought to know that. I just wrote the book. Anyway, it turned out that she was the one that hadn't crossed well, and she was the one that we were to help. So we got busy figuring and listening to her story, and it's in my book. But funny thing is, I grew up near Houston in Port Arthur, Texas, and they're from Houston, and you know where they went to school?
Where's that?
St. Rose of Lima Catholic Elementary School.
Get out of here.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, very.
So my sister was in Oregon raising alpacas that come from Peru, and St. Rose is from Peru. And my sister was doing these medical missionary things up in the Andes and began to be a friend of St. Rose, who's also a Dominican, same order that I'm in. So all these different kind of connections. But anyway, she's involved in helping Patrick Swayze and his sister. The sister was in a garage band in Houston right about the time Patrick went to New York and began his movie career. But she ended up doing the late night drinking and drugging and became an addict, in her early 20s. And then for about the next 20 years was in and out of rehabs. And she kind of felt like in her family, she was this ne'er-do-well drag on the family finances and on family energy. And it's not that they didn't love her, but that she always came with a load of problems. And she eventually died. And now Patrick is dying, and she hasn't fully crossed, but she wants to help him. And she wants to be seen as competent and loving and not a problem. And that was her mission. She wanted to help her brother cross over and go with him. So we helped her get ready for that.
And you do something like this, and I mean, that kind of connection comes in. I mean, that's very profound. And you're making this kind of cross the netherworlds connection for one family member to lovingly help another in this moment. And I know that the story is fully in your book, and our listeners will go mad if we don't get a little bit more on this, but what were you able to make that connection work so that she could help her brother in those final moments?
Yeah, I never did see Patrick. I never got into the hospital, and it ended up that wasn't what I was being asked to do to begin with. I was asked to help his sister in this roundabout way. But when it came time to write the book, I had a lot of stories to choose from. But I never really thought that I would have any interaction in this lifetime with these people again. I thought it was kind of a one and done. I did my job and they go on and I go on about my business. But when it came time to include their stories in the book, I just felt like, is it fair? I mean, do I have the right? And so I got with the prayer partner, and she said, well, why don't we just ask if we can have permission to tell their stories? And so we decided to include this one. And so I went back and we went into prayer and asked her if she would allow us to use her story. And she was happy to. So she just explained that, yeah, it wasn't that hard with she calmed down and presumed that she was competent to help. She hung around when he was ready to pass, and the two of them went together.
That's beautiful. And that's got to give you a nice sense of completion as well. Now, you said that this is kind of a, genre of this that happens. I mean, have you, obviously you've kind of been in touch with Kennedy, you've done some of these points, but have you had many celebrities or people of renown that have reached out to you either from the other side or from this side seeking help or counsel from the other, you know, the other world?
A little bit, but I just remember her name is Vicky. I called her Terry earlier. I was mixing her up with somebody. Anyway, her name is Vicky. Have I had any other celebrities that show up? They do. You know how, are you aware that Catholics, I don't know, in the Lutheran tradition, when you were baptized, did you take the name of a saint or an ancestor?
No, I was born David Warren Schrader, and I was given that name. They mentioned it during Lutheran ceremonies. We're not given, like, you know, another Christian name at all. It's whatever we were born with. And then, you know,
well,
we've got
parents,
and that's
tradition,
about it.
And I think in the Anglican and the Orthodox traditions, at least the Roman Catholic is what I know. And I was named after St. Gerard, the patron of pregnant women in difficult circumstances, because I was breech and my mom was older. And anyway, but you know, the idea of placing a person under the patronage of another. Are you familiar with that idea? Maybe your listeners wouldn't be.
No, please inform us.
Well, we believe that all those who have died are still alive in a different way, in a different realm, is the word you've been using a lot, and that we ask them to we take their name as kind of an honorific and ask them to partner with us in this life. So I'm like Nathan is my religious name, so Saint Nathaniel is my patron, and so is Saint Gerard, my middle name. One of the guys that I was helping was named Dwight, and he had a very complicated story. But when he was ready to pass, his ancestors came as a group because he didn't want to meet anybody he had already known, because he died in shame. And his first venturing out of his little afterlife, I don't know, holding zone that he had created, he didn't really want to run into anybody he knew yet. He thought he'd work his way up to that, but he asked, couldn't somebody that I've never met come for me? And he got his whole family line. They showed up like in formation. He described as being like bowling pins, and that they were all people that probably lived in, you know, sat up, you know, those photos of people sitting in uncomfortable furniture, staring at a camera in the 1880s or,
yes,
you know, when photography was really young. He said some of them were dressed like that, and they were coming as a group. And I said, well, good. Are you ready to go with them then? Do you feel safe? Are you ready to go? He said, but wait a second. There's this other guy off to the side. Remember, this guy's name is Dwight. He said, oh my God, it's the president. I said, what are you looking at? And he said, well, wasn't he a general? And he's named Dwight, and I'm named after him. I said, oh my God, you're talking about Eisenhower, aren't you? He said, yeah. And he's waving at me, and he's waving like he's in command, like it's an order. So anyway, Dwight Eisenhower showed up because his parents had named him after him.
All right. You want to hear something really weird? Talking about synchronistic.
Isn't the show all about the weird?
Yes, it is. And we're proving that. But you were just talking about synchronistic. You just said, was I named after a saint or anything? My grandmother wanted to name me Dwight David after Dwight David Eisenhower. My mom said, okay, No, I'm not doing Dwight. I'll go with David. She allowed them to think it was after Dwight David Eisenhower. To my mom, I was named after Davy Jones from the Monkees. But it's funny that the next story you launch into is about somebody named after Dwight David Eisenhower. That's just a weird coinkydink to me. But
well, if you want to, when you say your prayers tonight, you can you can open yourself to Dwight David and say hello and say Nathan says hi.
I will do so. I will do so. I was going to say, should we call forth people if we're seeking guidance? Should we ask for that before we go to bed? Should we say, you know, General Eisenhower, I would really like your guidance in making decisions, help me doing that? Or do we leave that strictly to the saints? You know, I mean, there shall be no God before me. Should we be asking insight and help from anybody but God?
In the Catholic tradition, we do that routinely. And I know in other parts of the body of Christ, that's thought little of, or, you know, even thought to be unholy or whatnot. But as a Catholic Christian, that was what I was raised on, that we're all on the same team. and that we're all a part of the body of Christ, and that we help each other out. So that would be something that I do that all the time. Before I came on this interview, I prayed to several different saints that are good communicators. Said, I'm going to be on this radio program. Help me be a really good guest.
Well, you're doing good so far. The saints have led you in the right path. So
good.
I appreciate that. Now, in helping these spirits to cross over and move on, when they cross over, they go to the end game, they go to the next level, wherever they're off to. Once they've made it there, do they ever come back and say, hey, Father Castle, thank you? I mean, is there ever any kind of indication that it worked, that there was, you know, that they've made it?
Well, there hadn't been, Dave, until I started writing this book. And I wrote parts of it about 3 years ago, but most of it's been written in the last 9 months or so. And when I got really serious about choosing the stories and as I mentioned earlier, seeking their permission to use their stories publicly, my prayer partner and I got together. We decided on 13 different stories that are in the book. And so we sat down right outside my house, right where I am right now as I'm talking. We sat on a pretty afternoon, and I just asked for all 13 of them to kind of come together, almost like they might be in a waiting room, and that we were going to ask each one for just a few minutes if they could talk with us and give us a yes or no to whether we could use their story. And what it opened up into was way more than that. It ended up being really sweet kind of follow-up stories. So at least for those 13, I do have little anecdotes of kind of what some of them have been up to since the one and only time that we had spoken before.
All right, Father Castle, I know you don't need your hair done. You don't need new color. You don't maybe necessarily need a brand new car, but you do need us to make sure to mention your book. And it is out and it's available. It just came out. You said, within the last week here?
Yeah, not even a week. I think about 5 days.
Oh, great. And we've got a link up to that on our website. We want everybody to be able to find. So if you just look on today's podcast, you're going to see the link, and you're going to see the link to all the other great advertisers we have on today's program. So it makes it easier for you to access them. You don't have to go back in and listen to the show and find the links and write it all down. We'll make it very easy for you, just like it is to find his book, Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. Our guest today is Father Nathan Castle. All right, Father Castle, you had some anecdotes about these crossing over and hearing back. I'd love to hear some of these follow-ups.
Yeah, remember the people that I help were traumatized and they kind of slid off to the side. They're not all earthbound. It's not like once in a great while there's somebody that stays in the ditch where they died in the car crash.
Right.
Not very often. Most of the ones I deal with have moved into some sort of other than earthly sphere, but it's not punitive, but it's not happy either. It's just kind of a bland spot, some bit of afterlife real estate that they are. And one guy described it as like the DMV. he said nobody decorates the DMV. There might be a plastic plant or something on the wall, but they don't go do any trouble with these places because they're really not to be there for too long. But anyway, I'm going to give you the story of Cheryl Lynn. Cheryl Lynn showed me this dream. I was in the passenger seat of a car, and she had me in her body. So I'm looking out of her eyes. I look across at the driver, and there's a collision, and the driver dies. I thought that she was describing her own death, but she wasn't. She was 24 when that happened. She was an water aerobics instructor and a college student. And she went from healthy and vigorous and athletic to paraplegic. So her boyfriend left her. Her life became nothing but physical therapy appointments. And she did that for about 10 years and got better, you know, but never was able to walk again. And then one day, Dial-A-Ride came to pick her up to take her somewhere, and the lift malfunctioned, and she was dropped on her head and died. Exactly. That's what she said. And when she kind of emerged in the afterlife, she pretty much said, to hell with life. If this is what it is, I don't want any more of it. But, you know, you can't just, you can't will yourself out of existence. She just didn't want to take part because it all just seemed too painful. So she slid off to the side and was really angry. And then at some point she was less angry and ready to try to reengage. And that's when she showed up in my dream. But anyway, she did cross. And when we asked her, she was angry and kind of had an attitude and stuff. And she had to kind of calm herself down and say, wait a minute, you're trying to help me and I'm being a bee about it. Anyway, she did cross and she came back to tell us about it. And I talked to her afterwards and I recorded the conversation. She ended up being a little girl doing handstands in the afterlife. That's all she really wanted to do for a while was move, because she had gone so much time without being free to move. She said, now I don't know how long it's been since I went from the way I was to the way I am now, but I think I've spent most of the time doing handstands or cartwheels, like a little girl on the lawn doing flips or rolls or whatever, just because I can. I feel like a lot of the time I'm just moving because I can move. She says, I don't need to work or earn a living. It's not going, anybody's going to judge me and say, stop that nonsense and buckle down or get over here and do your share or anything like that. I think I'm just a happy person doing what she feels like doing. And she also said, you know, it's not like I've been doing this for months, because it's always now.
That's beautiful. I mean, you know, here she not only relates back to you, but telling you what she's doing next and spending this time. Now, when you have these moments, how do they explain what it's like? I mean, are they basically just living on another planet? Is it just like another extension? Do they have to be reborn there, or do they just pick up where they left off here, but in a healthier spiritual, mental, and physical form?
Well, they all have some sort of body. She goes on to talk about, she uses the phrase religion body. She must have had some Christian training about a glorified body. She said, I don't really know about the religion body, but I can tell you it's not the same as the body that I was in before, thank God, because that one was broken. But it's similar to it and connected to it somehow. One of the things that I see frequently is that when people come to receive one of my stuck ones, it might be their grandmother, but she shows up the way she looked in her wedding picture. So it's not old grand.
Yeah, that's when I saw my grandfather, I would say he was probably more 40, 45, yeah, as opposed to 70 something years old. Right. He looked younger, healthier, more vibrant. That's what I keep saying, Father. When I go, if people see me as a ghost, it's going to be 1985, Dave, with fluffy wham hair, my pierced ear, my ripped blue jeans. That's the way I'm going to be seen.
And we just learned during the commercial that you're bald. So you're perfect. Perfect self would be have a wavy hair. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm going back to that. Yeah. So not that I'm in any rush to get to that side. I'm fine here. I'll be happy being bald until it's my time. But when I do come back, that's how I'll be
seen. And just
seen.
So you know, you're not limited to picking only one image of yourself and sticking to that all the time. You can change, kind of the way that we change clothes for a job interview or a trip to the beach. You know, we can present ourselves lots of different ways in this body. And it's kind of analogous to that. They're not stuck with just one version of themselves. They can be what they want to be when they want to be it.
All right. Good to know. And does this help you? I mean, I know many religious leaders, priests, fathers, pastors, whatever you want to refer to, ministers, they seem to be fine. And when their time comes, their time comes. But I also know some religious leaders who are terrified of death. And they love the concept of being with God and that part of it, but they don't want to die. They don't have any interest in it. And then I know many religious leaders who are like, oh, I can't wait to be in the glory of God. And, you know, but I'm not in any rush to get there, but I'm ready. I'm set. I have no fear in my heart. Where do you stand at this point, knowing that sometimes you get caught? And what if somebody isn't praying for you? What if there isn't a Father Castle there to help you move through?
Oh no, I don't have that kind of fear. I know that I'll be taken care of and I'm loved, and it really is only on one's own end. I mean, if you're resistant, well, then you're allowed to do that, and I'm not going to resist. I'm talking about a future event that hasn't happened, but no, I don't think I have so many people I want to see and so many reunions I want to be a part of. I can't imagine myself wanting to hold back.
have they gifted you with the sight of your time? I mean, do you know, you know, you're going to live on to be 88 and do this, or is that no. more of a burden to know these kind of things?
No, maybe you've heard of people that have that gift of precognition of when their death is going to be. There, it exists in the Catholic mystical tradition of certain saints knowing the day that they were going to die. No, I don't have any such ideas. I'm 62 and a half, and I'm surprised I lived this long. I thought somehow I was going to have a life shorter than this, but here I am, still going, and in good health.
Your calling is probably helping with that, right? I mean, as long as we've got a job to do and an action to continue on, that probably helps keep a lot of. Look at Mother Teresa.
Yeah. She lived a real long time. Well, just the launch of this book is a major chapter in my life. These are stories that I've mostly kept private, or mostly so. And now anybody that buys a book will know all about me. I'm now out there as this really unusual guy. But I feel excited that I've been given this to do, and it's beautiful work.
Are there people that are lost because there is no one to pray for them? There is no one to help them cross over? And after a period of time, do they get stuck where they can't?
Well, I don't know. I try to stay to what I've experienced. I said Catholic Mass this morning at a local parish here in Tucson, and there was a lady that at the time when you can say a prayer out loud for whatever you want, pray for all the souls in purgatory, especially those who have no one to pray for them. And I heard that prayer as a child. It's pretty standard in Catholic circumstances that we pray for people that don't have anybody else praying for them, and figure out God will know how to connect the dots. So I do that. And that was what I was doing with the souls at the bank. I used to pray for the one that was closest to the front, but nobody was praying for them. So they were aggravatingly close to getting into heaven and needed just one more push. So I would pray for them. And then I'd go to the back of the line and then the middle. And yeah, we can pray for anything and anyone. And for anybody that's attracted to a show like yours, they might be interested in trying that, praying for anybody they know that's died. It's just sending love.
I know when my mom passed, yeah, I sat there and at her bedside and thanked God for having her for as long as I did. But my prayer then was to not leave her here, to send forth the angels to come forth himself, whatever it took, just make sure that she's not lost or forgotten. She's not stranded. And that, she, you know, here's my problem. If I were to go tomorrow, I don't know that you could convince me to leave, because I love my family and my kids. I don't know that I would want to leave. I'd want to be here to witness and watch them. And that was my fear, is that mom might want to be, you know, here for that. And she's done her job. I want her to enjoy the fruits of her labor and have heaven, not have to watch us go through our trials and tribulations. So that was my prayer.
They can learn to do both. They can learn to do both. You don't have, I was taught this, that heaven contains every good. Would you agree?
Yes.
And there are many goods that are on the earth, right?
Right.
So heaven wouldn't earth have to be a subset of heaven?
I would guess so. That's a pretty good way to look at it.
That would be the math of it. Yeah, and I've dealt with, there's one story in the book of a lady that died in a plane crash and left little kids. And one of her issues was she didn't want to cross because she just felt so horrible about leaving her husband, a widow, and her kids without a mom. And she just was all stuck. And she ended up asking me, I told her, I'm sure that you remember, you're not the first person that ever died with and left young children behind. Surely there are going to be other people that you'll meet that have been through this before you, who could coach you on what, you know, how to proceed. And she asked me, well, how would that work? And I said, sweetheart, you're asking the right question, the wrong person. I just need to get you to move along. And then you ask that question to the next person you meet, and you'll learn how to be present to your kids. I do lots of weddings and lots of funerals, and I very often have experienced the presence of a deceased loved one at a wedding, for example, or of the deceased at their own funeral. All these people are gathered in love, and why would they want to be somewhere else when all these people that they love are all in one spot?
Understandable. I know our time is slipping away from us, about 10 minutes left together.
Okay.
What do you want people to know about the work you do and death and the afterlife? What do you think are some of the important elements that might help people like me that have a fear of death or a fear of what comes next?
Well, in the end, I've been a priest 33 years, and I try not to be in charge of outcomes of other people's lives. You know, you can be afraid of death if you want to be, but I'd rather you wouldn't. I barely know you, but I'd like you to be happier and peaceful, and just relax that you didn't know how to be born either, did you?
No, I didn't.
You were in the womb. And
yeah, but that's something that it was done without choice. I mean, that it was just part of it, right? I mean, it was just something.
Well, death is going to come to you without choice, too, sooner or later, whether you want it or not. And you're going to know how to do it. You know, you when you were in the womb, all you did was breathe water. And then that you took a last water breath and you coughed and you took in your environment, but it wasn't water anymore. And your whole little system shivered and it adapted almost instantly. And there you were breathing air. And I think when you take your last air breath, it's going to be just like that. You're going to take your last air breath and you're going to take in the surrounding environment, but it's going to be a different element.
All right. Eternity. So do they have consciousness of, you know, in that moment when they die, especially in maybe a tragic way, is there something you can impart to us now as wisdom that we might be able to take as a memory to that point so that we're not stuck, we're not languishing or laboring, that we can move on more freely?
Relax, you know, just relax. Stay in the present moment. Do the next thing. Don't skip a step. Don't be afraid. Just relax, trust, go with the flow. All will be well. I don't know how many other ways to phrase that, but you
okay. And should we ask for if we're feeling that loss and we're still dealing with grieving, is it okay to ask for them to come to us in prayer in dreams? My problem with my mom and I is, you know, she knew my overwhelming fear of death and promised me prior to her death she would let me know she was okay. She would communicate, and there's been nothing in 2 years that I would say is substantive, or I don't even feel a connection. I feel like it's gone. I don't know if it's because I prayed her over so well, but is it okay to ask for them to come back, or is that just bleeding from them? Are we leeching them from what they should be off doing now?
Well, it's, you know how you can say a prayer, and like you remember Jesus' prayer on Holy Thursday, take this cross away from me or this cup away from me, but thy will be done, not mine. You can pray for what you want, and you can add the caveat but I trust that whatever you want is best. You can ask for your mom to come, but say only if it's in right order and if it would be for her good and my good, and then just leave it alone.
Okay, but it's not necessarily anything you'd encourage or discourage. But if you want to do it, just make sure that you're asking for the right reasons.
Yeah, and that you're not trying to collect paranormal experiences just so that you have more to talk about at a party or something.
Yeah, no, to me, this is a very, and I meet so many people that are like that. They're like, Dave, why haven't I had that experience? Why didn't I have a dream visitation for my grandfather? My cousin did, my sister did, but I didn't. And I don't know how to answer those questions. And I don't know if we should be calling upon them to be there to comfort us. I don't know if that's, you know, how we should perceive that.
Yeah, and why don't I have a great natural golf swing? My friend does.
Okay.
You know, we can look at each other's gifts and wish we had them. But you know, we also know better than to envy each other's gifts, and let it be content with the person God made us, and be grateful for the gifts we've been given. And we could always ask for some other little bauble, some other little token, but wouldn't that be, don't you know that you're loved and that your mother loves you?
Yes.
Yeah. So what's the
big deal? That's not what I was looking for. It wasn't the love so much. It's just that reassurance from her, my closest connection, which I think a lot of people do, that everything's okay. I think that's what it's like. You know, I never question the love. I just question, A, that she is okay, and be that there is some place that there is.
Well, how about if I join you in praying for that? I'll pray for that for you if it's important to you.
It is. Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, even if you've got a blanket prayer that can help any of our listeners that are feeling that disconnect or that fear.
There's no magic words. It's just, God, please, if it would be okay. And I use the phrase within right order. You know, I think the universe unfolds as it should. But if this could be a part of the proper unfolding of things, if I could have a little message from my mom, that'd be sweet. I'd really like that. Amen.
Good enough for me. And yeah, thank you. Thank you for spending some time with us today and sharing these insights and stories. I know it brings a lot of people peace and comfort to know that there are people like you out there that are doing this work to help spirits so that they're not lost and forgotten.
Nobody is. And not indefinitely anyway, maybe for a little while, but not for too long.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Father Castle, it's been a pleasure. And again, we'll have a link up to your book right on today's podcast so people can find it very easily.
Okay, beautiful.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for tuning in and being a part of our world. And we'd like you to be a part of our world. As a matter of fact, Tim and I and Michelle and Tim Weisberg and Shannon LeGros from Midnight in the Desert are looking to put together an event to meet you in Pahrump, Nevada in 2019. We're looking to do a weekend spring get together. And if you're interested, email me at dave@darknessradio.com and I'll put it in a folder. And as soon as we have more information, I'll make sure that I email you first so that you can find out about it. But it'll give you a chance to meet all of us from Midnight in the Desert and the both of us from Beyond the Darkness and have a weekend adventure of fun, learning, laughing, and maybe even getting a chance to see KNYE, Art Bell's radio station out in Pahrump, and see if we can't get that private tour of the station and get a chance to see that all for ourselves. So again, if you're interested, just hit me up, dave@darknessradio.com. And Tim and I are going to hit the high seas. So Thursday, Friday, we fly out to Miami and we're going to be on the Jericho Rockin' Ragin' Wrestling Cruise. We're going to have a great time. We'll have brand new episodes up for you next weekend. And while we're there, we're going to be recording an episode or two, hopefully with some great celebrity guests. And remember, we're going to be doing that intention experiment for October 30th. So you want to tune in next weekend to find out how you can be a part of that intention experiment around the world for October 30th. So make sure you tune in next weekend to get all that information. We'll do that on next Saturday's show. All right, that's it for the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave, that's Tim, and you've been listening to Beyond the Darkness.